Welcome back to another episode of The Occasionalists. Matt Pagel here once again, flying the ship solo as we wrap up our first week in the March of Minisodes, The Occasionalists Daily, wrapping it up on a freaky Friday here, Friday, March 8th, and per usual, start off with a little On This Day factoid. 1930, Babe Ruth, on this day in 1930, Babe Ruth signs a two-year contract for an absolutely astronomical amount back then, $160,000 with the New York Yankees. GM Ed Barrow wrongly says, no one will ever be paid more than Ruth. Gosh, if only Ed knew. But it's just one of those things that's so funny, how much money. I mean, it would have been a lot of money back then, but not like an inconceivable amount, even by like 1930 standards. There are people that were making a lot more money than that, robber barons and things like that. But obviously still an astronomical amount of money to pay a baseball player, even though it was, one of the greatest baseball players of all time, a top three type of baseball player, a baseball legend, really. But it is kind of funny when you hear stuff like that, no one will ever be paid more than Ruth. Well, like, you're the one who gave him that money. So it would stand to reason that you're setting, I mean, I guess they just didn't think about it this way back then. You're continuously setting new sort of ceilings, which will eventually become floors. So, if you just didn't pay him that much money, who knows, maybe guys wouldn't be making $60, $70 million a year or whatever, $68 million a year deferred for Ohtani's contract. But it doesn't really matter. Just thought that was a funny little bit there. $160,000. I mean, that's like less than what a very average reliever makes if they spend most of the season in the major leagues. Simpler times. All right, so for this episode, I'm splitting it up between soccer and hockey, because I think they share the same obvious problem, and that's viewership. Soccer is the... I hate when people come at me like soccer is the most popular sport on the planet. Okay, but we're not the entire planet, and it is not even close to being the most popular sport here in the United States. It is football, college football. I don't know if there's any other football we can squeeze in there. And then it's football, and then it's football, and then it's football. Literally, if you look at the every year, you look at the top 100 individual TV shows every year, they put football into its own category, because every year football will make up about 90 to 95 of the top singular episodes of TV in any given year. So they just feel like it's, when it comes to when it comes to the Nielsen ratings, just put football in its own category, because you'll never see any other actual TV show bubble above like a random Browns Commanders game, which is just hysterical. But they both face this viewership issue, right? It's hard to get eyes on a sport that we, in terms of the MLS, in terms of soccer, a sport that we associate more with something that we're like giving our kids to do to keep them busy on the weekends. And with hockey, a sport that is it's much more niche, it's really hard to kind of get into the sport, because it's how many people know how to skate? And then add to that, how many people know how to skate and, wield a stick at the same time while covered in body armor? It's not our sport. It never has been. I like hockey quite a bit, but it's just never been our sport. Especially when you get away from the American Northeast and upper Midwest, talking about the Dakotas, Minnesota, Michigan, that area. When you start to get away from that area, it's harder and harder to do what our Canadian counterparts do. Like, pond hockey is super popular in Canada because it's cold enough for most of the year to play pond hockey. It is not cold enough in Virginia to play pond hockey. So it's, except for like maybe once or twice a year. So it's just something that didn't catch on with us culturally the same way that it caught on in Canada, which is totally fine. But I don't even think I need to get farther into that. Viewership is the obvious problem facing both of these. So let's just dive right into the non-obvious problems, and I'll start with soccer. I'll start with the MLS. And I don't want you to take this the wrong way, and I don't want to impugn soccer fans because they are very passionate. And there are a lot of people who are very into the MLS, and that's good. Like, I like when people, I don't know what it is, but I trust people who are sports fans, in a way that I don't trust people who are non-sports fans. Like, it just says something to me that you can kind of devote, excuse me, I had a cough there. It says something to me that you can devote at least a part of your attention and a part of your passion towards something that is a little bit more communal. I don't know. I could get into this in a I'll get into this in a different episode, I'm sure. But so, you know, if you're an MLS fan, great. This isn't directed at you necessarily. However, the MLS is a pure gimmick. I will say that one more time. The MLS is a pure gimmick of a league. The MLS is not a league so much as it is a startup company. And I say that because the MLS does things to try to bring credibility to itself that no other established league really anywhere else has to do. And I think the two most obvious, well, there's three obvious things here. I'll save the very obvious one for last here. But I do want to highlight here David Beckham and Lionel Messi. I think it was in 2006, no, 2007. Beckham, then only 31 years old, so still had plenty of good soccer left in him. But Beckham signs with the LA Galaxy in 2007. It was kind of a shocking move, especially since he was, since his contract was for significantly less than he would have made at, like, I can't remember what team he'd left at that point. If it was Man United or maybe a Spanish league team, I don't remember exactly. But point being, you know, he was getting offered more money in Europe. However, he goes and he signs with the MLS. Why did he sign with the MLS? Because there were all sorts of concessions made to him that were not afforded to any other player on the planet for him going to the Galaxy. So here's what Beckham got. I think his total salary, I think his like salary was like, I don't know, like $15 or $20 million a year. But Beckham also received a portion of total team revenue. So if you bought a ticket, bought popcorn, bought soda, maybe bought a Beckham Galaxy jersey. If you also went into the stadium and bought, you know, maybe a couple of beers, you gave money directly to David Beckham, directly to his hand. I know that seems like, I know that people are going to go like, well, yeah, that's what happens with every, no, that does not happen with every other league's contracts. That is never written into anything. So Beckham received a portion of total team revenue. He received, and which just that alone boosted his salary from like, I think it was $25 million a year. It boosted his salary to over $50 million a year. And on his contract, he essentially earned like close to like $260 million. He was also given the option to buy a stake in an MLS team for only $25 million. Which that doesn't sound cheap. It's not. It's $25 million. However, if you or I were to buy an MLS expansion team, the expansion fee is $500 million. So it's not just, you know, Beckham got away with getting essentially this great moneymaker. He owns Inter Miami now with Jorge and Jose Mas. But it only cost him $25 million when it would cost anyone else $500. You'd have to raise $500 million in capital to put towards an MLS expansion franchise. And that's just the fee to get into, you know, that's like how much money you have to show the MLS to even like get in the door to get a franchise someplace. So Beckham got a great deal though, only $25 million. So, you know, again, a thing that just doesn't happen in any other sports league. Let's go to one of Beckham's current employees, Lionel Messi. Messi receives a percentage, plus his salary is outrageous, like $50 million a year. But he could have, again, could have made more money flatly from salary had he gone to Saudi Arabia, or I think he was also rumored to go back to Barca. But he opted to go to Inter Miami again, which even though he's 36, it still was surprising because he's still, you know, easily one of the best players on the planet. But, you know, again, Messi gets us another sweetheart deal in the same way that Beckham got a sweetheart deal. Messi receives a percentage of broadcast revenue from Apple TV, which is to say that's a lot of money. He also receives a percentage of Inter Miami apparel revenue from Adidas. And kind of something that a lot of people noticed with Inter Miami is that he kind of plays when he wants to for Miami. Not that he doesn't ever show up, but, you know, there have been, speaking, you know, just to rewind back to yesterday's episode when I was talking about load management and how that's like really disappointing to fans. There were several games when Messi first came over to Inter Miami where road games where he didn't play, but there was no announcement, and Inter Miami knows better than to announce this. In fact, whoever the hosting teams were knew better than to announce it because they had like sold out stadiums to see Messi, except that you know, he was somewhere in Europe. So, you know, it's just concessions that would not be made to any other player in the MLS. And I realize that you're talking to global superstars of the sport, but again, it's just, these are things that no other American sports league would ever do. Can you think of another American sports league that does this with their free agents? Right? Like, no one. No one is, you know, when Aaron Rodgers got traded to the Jets and re-upped or whatever, it's not like they were just like, also, you're going to get 10% of popcorn sales. And if you want to, we're going to give you 5% of our TV deal. Like, that's ludicrous. No other league would fucking do this. But the MLS has to do this because as a league, they are a startup and not a real league. Not yet. Not until you can compete for the likes of Messi's and Beckham's and Mbappe's and those kind of players. Not until you can compete with them on just an even playing field and not giving them you know, cheap ownership passes, not letting them, you know, take revenue from Apple, or not letting them essentially dictate when they're going to play. Until that happens, the MLS will always be a bit of a gimmick and less of a league. And then, you know, as I mentioned, like I was hinting at there being like another thing here with the MLS. We all know that this is a Euro League retirement home. That the other part of this that makes it a bit of a gimmick is that There are so many aged EuroLeague stars, you know, be they from the Premier League, from Serie A, from wherever, it doesn't matter. They come over here to play because they're going to get a paycheck that they would never get over in Europe. And a lot of times we see them come over, like I think David Villa came over for NYCFC possibly several years ago, and like one player of the year. Like, he was really good because he's playing against essentially what amounts to a bunch of minor leaguers. A lot of guys that would never crack. I would say on every MLS team, there's one or two players that would be on a European League roster. But for the most part, it's a bunch of guys who would never crack a European League roster. So even like an aged player from Europe can come over here and just dominate. So that's the other part of it. This is just a retirement home. This is, you know, it's Major League Soccer, but on the world scale, it's Minor League Soccer. And when you have to bend over backwards to get talent, and I mean bend over backwards, giving them shares of broadcast revenue, jersey sales, giving them ownership stakes at a 1/20th the normal rate, that's a problem, and that's kind of goes against your credibility as a league. So, again, not impugning the average soccer fan, because I like the passion for it. I like when people are passionate about sports, but the league itself is just a bit of a gimmick. All right, let's move on to our friends on the ice, the NHL. The NHL has really come out in a startling way to show how openly regressive it is. And I'm talking about, this is going to be a fairly short wrap-up here, because I don't think there's really anything more I need to say about this. And I think I can be pointed and pointed and very concise with my feelings on this. The NHL has handled Pride Nights about as poorly as a professional league can. I mean, they have bungled this in the absolute worst way. So the hullabaloo started, it really kind of came to a head last year, but the hullabaloo started even a couple years before with certain players not wanting to wear these Pride-themed warm-up jerseys. And you would see it. I don't remember the individual players' names. It doesn't really matter. Because my issue isn't with the individual players, as you'll find out, it's with the league. So it started with individual players on, you know, whenever there was a Pride night, a couple of players, one or two players per team, sometimes a few more, would just not want to wear the Pride warm-up jerseys. You know, it was just a regular warm-up jersey with some, I think some of them, but I think most of them basically had like trim that was rainbow trim. But a lot of players just refused to wear them. And last year, it really came to a head with you'd have like three or four or five players not wanting to do it. And it just caused this like sort of, you know, post-game media scrum with everyone asking about it. And it just began like to roll into, you know, once it got out there that players didn't want to wear the jerseys, several teams opted just to cancel the Pride warm-up jerseys altogether. They just decided we're not going to do this. They essentially canceled their Pride nights. You know, it was just a few teams at first. And then the NHL stepped in and said, instead of saying, hey, you don't have to wear the jerseys if you don't want to, but we're not going to stop anyone else from wearing them that does want to. The NHL decided to go, okay, we're just not going to have them. We're no more Pride warm-up jerseys. You know, you can do Pride nights if you want to, but we're not going to have the players on ice be representative of the gay community in any way, shape, or form. Which just, again, I can't think of a bigger misstep, considering every other league does some variety of Pride night, or does some sort of community outreach to the gay community. Then, when the NHL was given the opportunity to clarify its stance on Pride night celebrations, the league instituted a fine for players putting Pride tape on their sticks. That is a huge fucking woof. Bad, bad look. Bad look. Are you fucking kidding me? It's one thing to sort of, I guess it's one thing to sort of just say, hey, we're not going to do the Pride jerseys. It's another thing to punish a player for putting Pride tape on their sticks, for putting rainbow tape on their sticks. That makes zero sense. And when you add those two things together, it makes the NHL look so fucking terrible. It makes the NHL look so regressive and backwards thinking. Again, I think there is a way out of this. Just fine. If certain players don't want to wear the Pride jerseys, don't want to put Pride tape on their sticks, let them go. I don't think forcing players to do this is it the right take, but it doesn't make any sense to league-wide ban certain things and then league-wide punish certain things, certain outward displays of support for the gay community. It doesn't make any sense. I truly cannot recall a single major professional sports league in the United States just openly declaring essentially bigotry is acceptable and punishing those who want to show support for the gay community. It just makes no sense. It is one of the worst looks you could possibly make. And that is just my opinion from a very, from a social standpoint. I'll also get into this from a commerce standpoint as to why this makes absolutely no sense. So Pride nights, and there's other community nights, right? Like they're in most baseball teams will have like some kind of, Latin Heritage Night, you know, like if you're in Miami, there's like always like a Cuban night. You know, I'm assuming if you're in Arizona, there's probably more of a Mexican Latin Heritage Night, that kind of stuff, right? Like we always have those. But those nights, including Pride nights, they're not like the teams aren't like publicly declaring themselves necessarily like, you know, that they're the biggest friends of the gay community or the Latin community or the Black community or the Asian community. it's just a way to get a few more people into the arena or the ballpark or the stadium. Like, you know, it is sort of, you can call it corporate pandering or whatever, but it is a way to get a few more people that you wouldn't otherwise get into your game to be there. I don't understand why a league would voluntarily shut off a potential revenue stream by excluding an entire segment of people who might like hockey if they felt welcome at a hockey game. That just doesn't make a single bit of sense to me. If any business that you run, you want to make your product available to as many people as possible. I know that's sort of blanket business, but if you're not expanding, then you're dying, right? Like, that's kind of I think that's a business saying. But if you're not, if you are not willing to, at least from the commerce standpoint, allow teams to openly welcome the gay community into the hockey arena, I don't understand, like, why they, it's lost on me as to why a team would so openly shoot themselves in the foot from a commerce standpoint, and then socially re-cock the gun, point it at their other foot, and pull the trigger once again. It makes no sense. All right, that wraps up this episode, and it wraps up the first week of the Occasionalist Daily. Looking forward to getting into the next week, which is, let me check, double check my schedule here. We're gonna bring the fun back into the gym with some fun gym exercises, and we're gonna at the same time do a little bit of debunking and punching up again, punching down up. I don't know, punching back against some gym influencers. So it should be a fun time next week. Until then, thank you for downloading and streaming. We will catch you on Monday.